And welcome again to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, naturopathic physician, herbalist, certified by the American Herbalist Guild, and we're really glad to be here. Natural Nurse has the week off, so I'm hosting the program, and we have a great program today with one of my illustrious colleagues from way back when, Dr. Michael Horney, who is a chiropractor and a diplomat of the American Board of Chiropractic Orthopedics, who's been practicing for 35 years. And we're going to be talking about not only chiropractic, but other things around chiropractic, how it can help you with many, many different things. Also, Dr. Horney does a lot of personal training, hypnosis, weight loss, and nutrition in his practice, and he's lectured to many local groups and chiropractic colleges. He's affiliated with hospitals in Long Island and orthopedic and physical therapy groups. He is a member of the American Chiropractic Association and the American Board of Hypnotherapy. And again, his mission is not only to treat pain and crack your back, so to speak. It's all about educating and motivating people of all ages to learn healthy lifestyle habits and respect the body's inherent ability to heal itself. And so without further ado, we're going to bring on Dr. Michael Horney. How you doing, Mike? It's great to hear from you again.
It's great to hear from you. What a pleasant surprise. I didn't realize you were going to be here. I thought it was Ellen. It's terrific. It's been a long time, Eugene.
Yeah. So I just want to say that Dr. Horney used to do, not only was he an ardent sponsor of our radio program, but he also did a segment called The Spinal Column, which was really amazing stuff that we broadcast for many, many years on the program. So we're glad he's back in the radio groove. We have new technology now. It's all digital. Back in the old days, it was all analog. We'd go to the station and record it and edit it ourselves, but now with modern technology, it's really good. Now, you know, with all this modern technology, Dr. Horney, you know, chiropractic is a very ancient discipline. I remember once I was doing some research, because I teach history of medicine, and I also talk about chiropractic, too. Have chiropractors from the Bridgeport School come and lecture in my integrated class, but I saw pictures of Asclepius, and in the Asclepius temple of the Greek doctors doing what seemed to be a some type of a body work or adjustment type of thing. Is chiropractic very ancient?
Yeah, it's very, very ancient. Probably, you know, people may be familiar with bone setters, you know, from years and years and years ago and throughout history. So it started out like that. And then it's something that when something works, it just tends to prevail. And then over the years, probably around 1895 or so, it became formalized. And the first chiropractic school formed. And then people started to go there, and people were getting all sorts of results with all sorts of problems. And now, you know, there's accredited chiropractic school. There's about 60,000 chiropractors throughout the United States. Most insurance companies recognize chiropractic. There's chiropractic in hospitals. Like, it went from being kind of a fringe profession to a mainstream profession at this point. And we work, you know, hand in hand with naturopaths, acupuncturists, physicians. It's part of healthcare, and it's natural healthcare, and that's the niche that we have, just like yourself. And, you know, it's a really important thing for people to appreciate the value in the body's natural ability to heal. And so, yeah, it started out in ancient times, and it's progressed to, you know, very formal education at this point and very widely accepted.
And quite a bit of research on chiropractic. We'll get into that more later on in the program. We'll talk about maybe some of the interesting studies on what actually happens when you get a chiropractic adjustment at the physiological level. But how do you guys differ from, like, a physical therapist or an osteopath or a physiatrist, a physician that's trained to do some type of mechanical, what they call mechanotherapy, I think is the old term that kind of is a broad umbrella of these types of manual medicine techniques?
The biggest difference is more philosophical, because what chiropractors do, anyone who does hands-on manipulation out of, you know, osteopaths, physical therapists, chiropractors probably do 99% of hands-on manipulation. That's like our bread and butter. And we work, you know, with the spine, but also with other joints in the body. So philosophically, the difference is chiropractors believe that by manipulating your spine, it's affecting your nervous system. So basically your brain and all the nerves that come out between the joints of the spine, chiropractors believe by adjusting that, in addition to relieving painful conditions, it can affect the ability of that nerve to function. So if, let's say if that nerve functions, everyone's out there heard of sciatica, right? You have this raging pain down your leg, and chiropractors treat that effectively all the time. Well, doesn't it make sense if you can treat sciatica, which is an inflamed nerve, okay, well, what about the nerves that go to your stomach or your intestines or your heart or your lungs? So the theory philosophically with chiropractic is it's not only for musculoskeletal conditions, but it has the potential to enhance the body's natural ability to heal by making sure the nerves between those joints are functioning properly. So that's probably the biggest difference.
Well, the nerves, you know, not only send pain messages, but they actually send functional messages, motor messages to these organs.
I mean, for instance, someone who has diabetes, for instance, and they lose their ability to feel, typically someone in a nursing home in a bed, if they're not moved all the time because they can't feel the pressure on their legs because the nerves aren't working properly, they get these terrible, terrible ulcers that can be life-threatening at times. So that's like one example that people have heard of. So that's really, you know, the difference is the philosophical difference. The day-to-day difference for anyone out there, if you're going to a physician and an osteopath basically has all the privileges of a physician, their scope of practice, they can prescribe medication, they can perform surgery. You can see them, they're trained to diagnose the problem, and their approach tends to be medical or surgical. And there are some osteopaths that do manipulation as well, but most of the osteopaths that I know of in the area, they have specialties. So they might be a family doctor, they may be a neurologist, a neurosurgeon. So it's kind of very, very similar to the traditional physician. Physical therapists, most of them now are doctorate programs. So they in terms of the conditions they treat, like musculoskeletal problems, neck pains, back pain, things like that, shoulder issues, are similar to what chiropractors do. If I had to generalize, I would say physical therapists will tend to be more exercise-oriented, but certainly they can do manipulation, and chiropractors will tend to be more manipulation-oriented, but certainly we're very involved with exercise. So there's similar conditions that we treat, and to say one is, you know, better or worse, I mean, it just depends. I think, you know, both disciplines are good disciplines. Probably the biggest difference between a physical therapist and a chiropractor, though, if you came to my office, Eugene,
yeah,
I'm trained to differentially diagnose what the problem is, and if I can help you, I'm going to help you. If I can't, I'm going to refer you. Physical therapists, if for them to be covered through insurance, typically need a referral from a physician for a particular treatment. So if you refer to a physical therapist for neck pain, and then while you're there you're saying my foot hurts, they're going to have another prescription from a physician. So that's like the day-to-day difference that patients would find that's meaningful to patients.
So I know my chiropractor, she calls herself a doctor of the nervous system, and I think that's a great way to look at it, whereas the osteopath felt it was more like, you know, when they did the manipulation, it would restore good circulation there.
Exactly.
But I guess it does everything, all those types of things. So what actually happens when you when you do a manipulation like that, or an adjustment, which actually is a more trademark name for the chiropractic profession?
Yeah, chiropractors tend to use adjustments because way back when the profession started, guys and girls went to jail, if they were considered practicing medicine without a license. So years ago, you know, in the early 1900s, chiropractors had to use language that differentiated themselves from medicine. That's changing now. So that's why chiropractors tend to use the word subluxation, adjustment. But basically, there's different styles of adjusting. The traditional one, which is hands-on, where people will say, oh, he cracked my neck. You know, it's kind of like popping your knuckle. What's happening there is we're finding joints that they're stuck in position. They're not moving as well as they should. Kind of like if you think of a hinge on a gate, and over years through inactivity, it's rusted, and that gate's not moving smoothly anymore. Well, what happens with the joint due to tight muscles, trauma, improper posture, things like that, that joint is not freely moving. And when that happens, the joint can get inflamed. It can begin to cause pain. It may affect the nerve that's right adjacent to it. So what a chiropractor does is finds those joints by palpating, touching, feeling the person, feeling if it feels like it's extremely tight or not moving, listening to the type of symptoms they have. And then through a hands-on adjustment, you hear they move that joint by pushing or turning. And you may hear a popping sensation. What that popping sensation is, just like when you pop your knuckles, it's not your bones making that noise. The joint is actually moving apart slightly, and it happens so fast that there's fluid that's typically in the joint, synovial fluid, there's gas dissolved in that fluid. So when we make that adjustment, the joint separates so fast, the gas bubbles out of the joint, and that's the popping you hear, and that's called cavitation. You don't always hear that, but when you do, that lets you know that there was definite movement in the joint. But then there's other techniques where you don't do the popping. You may do just like very hands-on stretching, gentle types of like myofascial release techniques. There's instruments where you're not using your hands. It's an activator is a type of instrument where it provides a force on the vertebra. So you need to have a whole arsenal of techniques, because the oldest patient I ever had was 97 years old. I'm not going to use a forceful technique on a 97-year-old patient or an osteoporotic woman or a newborn child, and some chiropractors adjust, have a specialty in pediatrics. So you need enough techniques to fit the population from children to senior citizens. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, excellent. And then I think another issue is, or another interesting fact is, like, sometimes the joints get their nutrition from being properly moved or being able to move in all the different angles and rotations and things like that. In other words, we were designed, interestingly, that we don't have a lot of blood flow to the joints, that we're only getting blood through, some type of osmosis or osmotic. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little bit of blood that feeds the joints in the subchondral bone. Now, what happens when the joint, you mentioned pain and dysfunction, but what happens when the joints aren't really moving in all the directions they're supposed to do? What's the end result of all that?
They begin to break down. You're exactly right, and it's interesting because, you know, this doesn't come up a lot in conversation, but you're exactly right. What happens, joints are designed to move. So first off, people need to move more. Like, sitting is the new smoking. Sitting is really hazardous to your health on many levels. So joints are designed to move. So people who, they're commuting into the city, they're sitting for 2 hours, and at work they're sitting for 6 to 8 hours, and they come home, they're wiped out, and they're like sitting on their in front of their computer or TV. So some people never move. So what happens, the blood supply, which you're exactly right, the joints have a limited blood supply. Most of the movement is through pressure. Most of the blood supply is through movement pressure differentiation, osmosis.
Right.
So
right.
When you have a joint that's not moving properly over time, the cartilage between the joint that acts as a buffer, that begins to break down and that begins to dry out. So when someone says you have a slipped disc, for instance, what can be happening in the spine is that disc, where there's like a jelly-like center and there's rings of cartilage around it, the cartilage begins to dry up, and it begins to fissure and crack. And now you don't have the shock-absorbing ability of that disc, and eventually that usually leads to some type of pain. The vertebrae now become closer together because the disc gets compressed. It can't act as a shock absorber, and the nerves come out right between that vertebra. So now there's less room for the nerves to move. So now you're setting up a situation where you can have a local pain in the joint, muscle spasm that's guarding the joint, eventually irritating your nerve. And wherever that nerve supplies, if that's irritated, that's the type of symptoms that you may have. So it could be headaches or tingling or numbness down your arm or leg or digestive issues. So, yeah, movement's really important. And then specific exercises are important. Posture is extremely important. There's not any one thing that fixes this. And, you know this. It's a combination. And movement is absolutely crucial for the very reasons that you just discussed.
Well, the way I discuss it with patients is like, you know, you could take, you know, make the blood very rich in nutrients, and certainly there are people with a tremendous amount of deficiencies in many vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and things, but then you have to deliver them to the joints. And the only way you can allow those joints to imbibe in this healthy nutritional soup is to create proper onloading and offloading of the joints. Explain what that would be like, because the joints are like a sponge, and sort of like when you let go, the nutrients get sucked in. And I think when you put pressure on the joints, like walking or whatever you're doing, that's kind of squeezing the joints out. And there's almost like a rhythm, almost like the tide.
And also flow, with your musculoskeletal system, it's like your musculoskeletal system is your second heart. So all the blood that's pumped through the body, aside from the heart pumping that everyone's aware of, that all your muscles are helping to pump that blood throughout the heart. So, for instance, if you're sitting for long periods of time, you're not using, the muscles aren't helping, the joints are being compressed just due to gravity, okay? And over time, there's the muscles start to, like, tighten up because they're in the same position for a long amount of time, and they're engaged more, so they're firing more, so they're building up more metabolic waste products. So what happens, you have this vicious cycle where a muscle is in a sustained contraction. You're sitting at your desk, at the computer, at work for hours at a time, really focused on doing your job. You're starting to feel like kind of the back of your neck and your shoulders and lower back, because those muscles, after about 20 minutes of not changing position, they really begin to tighten up. They start to build up a lot of metabolic waste. Lactic acid is one that people have heard, but there's many. That starts to cause inflammation and muscle spasm. Those muscles attach to your joints. Now the joints can't move properly. The joints can't move properly, so the muscles guard to protect the joint because the body thinks something's wrong. So there's this vicious cycle. So it's really important that not only do you move throughout the day, but do specific exercises. You also brought up a good point, because I said this is a team approach. Yes, you need to deliver all the nutrients that's in your blood, and through movement, exercise, chiropractic adjustments, all of that helps that, okay? But you need to have those raw ingredients.
Yeah.
So if you're not eating properly, that's the whole other end. I
can
adjust someone
too
from here till tomorrow, you know, for the rest of their lives.
Right.
If they're not eating properly, anything that I can influence is minimized because they don't have the raw ingredients to be healthy.
Exactly.
So that's
a really important point that
you made.
Thank you. Yeah. And there's absorption of, you know, you have, of course, you know, proper mastication. So
that
you,
means
you know,
chewing for those of you out there.
And chewing, and then, you know, then the gut has to be a good absorptive thing. So perhaps, you know, there are segments all throughout the body that if you adjust, it sends the good energy to the gut, and that can kind of help with, you know, absorption. And then, of course, you got to get things through the cell membrane, too. So it's very, you're right, it's a team approach. It takes a village, like, you know.
There's no question. Everything is really connected. So, you know, we do as much as we can do in our office, which is basically all the things we're talking about, making people aware that there's not any one thing that's going to be a panacea. It's lifestyle.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing we do in the office that I'm, you know, trained and experienced in is chiropractic adjusting. But then we talk about nutrition, the food that you eat. We talk about certain types of supplements. You mentioned the gut. Well, adjusting is absolutely, that can have an influence. But how about probiotics? more and more research is coming out about that. In terms of your posture, if you're doing things habitually that you're not even aware that you're doing it, that's creating imbalance in your body, that's going to affect all the joints of your body, including your spine and potentially the nervous system. So we need to address that. How about stress? How about no matter what you're doing, but you're totally stressed because you hate your work or maybe you're having a difficult time with, you know, your significant other, or you're having financial difficulty, whatever it is, that's a big piece of it for some people. So my job, as I see it, when someone comes into the office, is to, like, see all the pieces and what does someone need to make them as healthy as possible. So I have my role that I can do. Part of that is making them aware. Sometimes I could help, but sometimes I'm referring them to people like yourself. Sometimes someone has a medical or a surgical problem. I have people come in here sometimes, they thought, you know, it was a neck problem, something that we can, you know, we can certainly help them with. And then when I take a history and examine them, it turned out they had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yes,
you know, so there,
of course,
there
like
might,
a back pain or a back pain.
Yeah,
due to,
multiple myeloma. Like I've seen things like that over the years. So
or even just one interesting case that was back pain. They had shingles.
I just had someone the other day with that, and sometimes the rash doesn't always show initially.
Yeah.
So that's why it's really important to, if you listen to your patients, most of the time they're going to tell you what the problem is. You just have to listen and ask the right questions. And then
Dr. Horney, that people hold emotions in the muscles as the body like a hologram, and they can hold traumas for a very long time in the body as well?
Absolutely. And I'm really
I know you do hypnosis.
Right. So
like
I have like a particular interest in that. So like I'm really aware of that stuff, and every single patient that comes to my office, like that is discussed. I just had someone this morning before I spoke with you, we were doing hypnosis, right? It was for weight loss. And as it turns out, she lost her husband a few years ago. She lost her son a few years later. So it turns out the issue wasn't weight loss. The issue was all the emotional trauma for years that was inside her body to these extreme losses. And she had a lot of other medical issues. So the whole session became about dealing with that. And I'm not a therapist, so I'll tell someone, you know, this is something you may need your therapist for, but the hypnosis may be able to help you along with that. So, yeah, people come with, like, there's physical trauma that's stored in muscles. There's emotional trauma that's stored in muscles. And anyone who does any type of body work, chiropractor, massage therapist, they will all have stories about they're working on a patient, and all of a sudden the patient has this, like, an emotional release, and they'll start crying or shaking. Like, I've witnessed that personally, and when I've spoken to other people who do body work, 100%. And you know, if you can't get to that point, if that's part of the issue, they're going to have chronic issues. Like, it's never going to go away. There's nothing in the world that it's ever going to go away completely. Like, at some point, that has to come out, in my opinion.
So they keep, so the body definitely stores these things. And what about, now, why do we see so much osteoarthritis? And, like, we're seeing younger people. It used to be the disease of old people. Now we're seeing young people in their 30s and 40s that are getting new knees and hips and things like that. Why are you seeing so much of this?
I think there's a couple of things. One, I think with, you know, a lot of people, it's actually a lack of movement. You know, you always hear about the football players and athletes that have, you know, premature osteoarthritic changes due to, like, the trauma of their sport, and that's an aspect. But I think for a lot of people, it's a lack of movement, a lack of exercise, eating a ton of processed foods. In osteoarthritis, even though that's not a true inflammatory arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis, you know, if they took out the cells and analyzed them, there's inflammatory cells in them. Although you don't find that in osteoarthritis, what I've read more and more is there's a chronic low-level inflammatory problem. And I think what happens, a combination of lack of motion, poor posture, okay, and then eating tons of processed foods where the byproducts are a lot of inflammatory products, and particularly if anyone's overweight, it gets stored in the fat. So my feeling, and again, there'll be people who will disagree with me. There's not a consensus on this, but my feeling is there's like an underlying chronic inflammatory process coupled with lack of exercise, poor postural habits. I also feel that people are under tremendous amounts of stress now, and I think stress can affect the inflammatory process as well. So I really think it's a mixture of that.
Mm.
And then the other component, you know, part of the reason why you're hearing a lot about it is like the ability to replace joints. You know, it's really amazing. People, the quality of their life can be improved tremendously. So I think there's more publicity about that. So you're hearing more about that because of that. So that, I think it's all those. What do you see anything else beyond what I've said?
No, pretty much that's, I mean, certainly I think, like you said, there's a lot of pathways to inflammation, like glycation, people that have abnormal blood sugars for a very long time. So they're not diabetic, but they're kind of metabolic syndrome. Well, that creates inflammation. You know, they're, like you said, the diet's poor, and they're eating the wrong oils. They're not getting enough antioxidants. Maybe they have methylation issues, so they're making a lot of homocysteine, which is a pro-inflammatory substance there. They have microcirculation problems because, you know, like I mentioned, the little subchondral bone that feeds the cartilage is not getting the proper circulation, so they may... So some of the newer research I've read is that osteoarthritis is like sometimes the first sign of atherosclerosis because the little micro circulation things are capillaries and are getting all clogged up, and that's, you know,
that's really
starving the
joints. I
haven't
heard that. That's an interesting thought.
Osteoarthritis is a starvation disease. You're starving for, you know, proper exercise. The joint is not getting properly moved, like you mentioned, so there's the fixations. But then there's at the level, maybe you're starving of nitric oxide, which is, you know, kind of vasodilates the arteries and capillaries. So you're maybe have the glycation, which makes the blood sticky, changes the viscosity, which then, of course, changes the hemodynamics, and then you're not delivering enough oxygen and nutrients to those, to the subchondral bone. Maybe there's, like you said, there's a blunt trauma. You did something and you just smashed the... I see that on MRIs a lot, like where the area of the knee, for instance, there's actually a bruise that forms underneath the subchondral bone, and that bruise goes on, and then that area of the cartilage kind of dies if it's not taken care of properly. So, yeah, so that's – I'm looking at the time. We have to take a break. We're going to play one of our natural medicine chess. And when we return, we're going to talk about a little bit more about education and training of chiropractors, things that you can actually treat and help out there besides headaches and some of those other things, and then also talk a little bit about insurance. And then also we got to throw in, be the devil's advocate, some of the naysayers that – don't like chiropractors for some reason or another, think it's dangerous to crack a neck, think that you can give someone a stroke and things like that. I want Dr. Horney to educate everyone out there properly. So stay with us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'll be back soon.
Great. Thanks, Eugene.
This edition of The Natural Medicine Chest will discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
Okay, and yeah, tea tree oil is a fabulous thing. And we're talking about chiropractic care with our illustrious guest, Dr. Michael Horney, and he is not only a chiropractor, but a diplomat of the American Board of Chiropractic Orthopedics, and he's been practicing chiropractic for 35 years. He's also a clinical hypnotist and personal trainer and weight loss and nutrition expert. So we're going to continue our discussion. Welcome back.
Hey, Eugene.
Great. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about, the obesity epidemic in the country here, and I know you do a lot of work with weight loss. How do you blend chiropractic with, and what do you think? Is it the old calories in, calories out thing, or is it much more complex? I'm sure it's
much more complex. Yeah, I think it's way more complex than that. The first thing we do is when patients come in, and a patient taught me this, because we measure, you know, we get someone's height and weight, and it's a chart called the BMI, body mass index. So that's like a generalized screening tool, and you want to be under 25. That's the number. So if your number, if your BMI is over 25, it could range from like, you know, obese, like overweight, obese, morbidly obese, where it puts you at a very great risk for cancer, heart disease, diabetes, things like that. So every patient that comes in, we get a BMI on them. We also measure their hips and their waist, and we're looking for a ratio between their waist and the hips. So like in a woman, let's say if it's over 1, people might have different measurements, or if it's over 0.8 in a man, again, you're at a greater risk for things like heart disease, diabetes, and that those ratios, the hip and waist and hip ratio, sometimes can correlate with cardiovascular disease even more so than a cholesterol reading. So we do all of this type of screening. And then what we do is we ask someone, are you at a comfortable weight? And people who I wouldn't have even thought to ask about weight loss, they didn't really look like they were that overweight, sometimes they'll say, not really, I feel so much better if I'm 10 pounds lighter. And if that's the case, then we'll let them know. We have 3 different types of weight loss programs that we use in the office here. And there's a myriad of weight loss programs, but I'll tell you the ones that we do. And that was an important thing because a patient said, you know what, Michael, you need to ask people that because, like, and she was the one that said, I need to lose about 10 pounds. And when she lost 10 pounds, not only did she feel physically better, she had more energy, she had knee pain that was dramatically reduced, like it affected her in so many ways. Mm. So, one, we start out by asking. Then I found you need to have a menu of options. So, first off, someone needs to be ready. They have to acknowledge that they're motivated to lose weight. Mm. Then the options range from what I feel is the best program. It's called First Line Therapy. It's through a company, Metagenics, that I've worked with. Mm-hmm. It's essentially a modified Mediterranean approach. It minimizes dairy. And we have a health coach in the office, and it teaches people how to eat, the foods that you need to have in your house, how to prepare it. It's essentially small, frequent meals, low glycemic index. What that means, if you eat something, it's not going to spike your blood sugar, and then your blood sugar is going to plummet. And you may eat 6 times a day, and there may be certain supplements that will integrate with mm-hmm. that. But the main emphasis is on food and teaching people how to eat. So that's one program we use. A lot of people, they had to invest their time in that, and they had to like buy the food, cook the food. Some people that they didn't want to do that. So then we have another program called Take Shape for Life. And what that is, it's also a low glycemic program, so it's small frequent meals, but all the foods are prepared. You just heat it up in a microwave where there's bars and shakes. That's easy. That's a turnkey. Someone just orders the food, they get it, they just eat what that is. We also have a health coach trained in that. To me, the health coach is a big aspect of it, someone on a weekly basis that you can go to that's supporting you, okay? And people, they were more inclined to do that because it was just easier for them. Then there's a third approach that one of the health coaches started using. It's called ChiroThin. And it's a very restricted caloric diet, but you're supplementing with amino acids so you don't lose muscle mass. Because you have to be very careful if you have a diet, you know, that's under 1,000 calories. You don't want to start burning muscles for energy. That's an unhealthy thing to do. And that's a program that, with a knowledgeable person, they can lose weight quickly. In all the programs, ultimately, it's how do you keep the weight off? Any right. program, a paleo diet, like any Weight Watchers, any program that I've had patients on, patients have all lost the weight. The issue is most patients, within a year or so, gain it back. So that's where teaching them new habits, having a health coach. Hypnosis plays a role. Like I said, this morning I had a person that we were doing hypnosis for weight loss. So that's something else. So we're a resource for that. And I just read a big study. Maybe you're familiar with it, Eugene. Mm. They studied on the program, the Biggest Losers, I guess. They had a number of people that lost, in some cases it could have been hundreds of pounds.
Yeah, right.
And they studied these people, and just to kind of summarize it, what it is for some people, they, just at rest, they're burning so many less calories than other people, everything else controlled. So they were saying that for some people losing weight, And you all know, if everyone out there, if you ask, you know, friends, relatives, right? We all have friends. It's like, oh, my God, this guy eats so much. How come he's so thin? If I look at food, I gain weight.
Right.
Well, it's based in reality. Some people, their metabolic rate for one reason or another, they burn so much less calories that for them to lose weight and sustain it, requires like a Herculean effort.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. So when you're working with anyone, I think you have to take all that into consideration. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. I think, you know, someone has to, you know, through trial and error sometimes, find out what's the best thing to do for them. And I think the most important thing is not weight loss as much as weight loss, but doing it in a healthy way. So you're eating really healthy foods that will sustain you, that will nourish you, that's going to enhance your body's natural ability to heal. And at the same time, you're going to be losing weight. And it's something that's not so extreme that it can be part of your lifestyle. To me, that's the key. And that's
I think the hypnosis is really interesting, Michael, because it can get people to maybe change their habits. Because, you know, sometimes I guess, you know, they do these programs, but then they go back and their family dynamics are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The whole family's not involved in wellness and health. And so, you know, and then they go back to their job with the same stresses and, you know, they drive home the same way. Everything's the same. You know, there's nothing kind of different. And so when
you're working with anyone, you know, in terms of health, and this gets back to what I said about chiropractic, there's not like one thing that you need to do. You need to address all these issues. And to me, they're lifestyle issues. So if someone's coming to lose weight and you're so narrowly focused on, okay, here's a diet, here's what you're going to do to lose weight, and maybe they'll even lose the weight, but you ignore all the other factors in their life, the context of why they're heavy, in my opinion, there's no way they're going to have a sustained weight loss. Even people that have had bariatric surgery, sometimes they put on all the weight again.
Yeah.
So it needs to be addressed. So if you're working with someone, you need to know what you're good at, what you're effective at. You need to draw the people out to find out what other issues are going on in their life. And if you're not able to help them with that, you need to refer them to someone who can. So it might be a therapist because they have emotional issues and they're eating emotionally.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much weight they lose. If those issues aren't resolved, you know it's going to go back to that again. And then the other issue might be exercise. Maybe they're in pain and they can't exercise. So, I mean, essentially it boils down to it's lifestyle issues. You have to look at a person not as a symptom, not as a heavy person or a person with headaches or back pain. You need to look at a person as a person and understand within the context of their life, what are they doing that's promoting health? And what are they doing that's really inhibiting their body's ability to function better? And if you
can raise that awareness, that's
huge.
Yeah. That takes a lot of time, certainly in an allopathic model where you're spending 10 minutes with the patient.
That's not likely to happen. That's going to happen. And physicians aren't happy about that. Patients aren't happy about that. And it's really what the patient wants. Like, you come to my office, Eugene, okay, and I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, okay, how can I make this patient aware of their lifestyle and improve their lifestyle so they're going to be healthier, more productive, happier? What can I do? That's what this office is all about. But then you came to me with headaches, and I said, okay, Eugene, what are you looking for? Like, you're having migraine headaches every day for the past year. Do you just want the headaches to go away? Is that what your goal is? Do you want a program of care where not only are your headaches going to get better, but you're going to feel healthier, more energy, you're going to start exercising, all of this stuff? Well, you might say, listen, I don't have a lot of time, I don't have a lot of money, fix my headaches and I'm gone. So if you're not receptive to the other things, well, that's your decision and I respect that. So I'm going to make everyone aware of it, but it's what you want.
Yeah.
Someone else, though, if you explain the benefits that's meaningful to them. You're a naturopathic physician, Eugene. You see all these people. That takes a lot out of you. Do you want to be healthy enough, not just not have headaches, but to have the energy to help all these other people? And we can help you do that by changing these lifestyles. And we have the resources here, or we have people we can refer you. Does that interest you?
Right.
Well, you know what? That might interest you a lot because that's meaningful to you. So as far as I'm concerned, that's part of the issue. And you know what? You have to find the balance between listening to people and meeting their needs and being financially viable so you can keep your office open. And
well,
it's tricky
yeah.
in this day and age. It's very, very tricky. That's the balance that I deal with every day.
Sure. Well, that's why it takes more than just one. You know, people complain, oh, I got to go to that chiropractor 3 times a week for a month and then twice a week, and then I got to keep going back. But how do you change that kind of more allopathic philosophy, that static philosophy? The body never stays the same, so why should you not, you know, maintenance is always happening. You know, the way I explain it is you, when you drive your car, you don't just change the oil once. You don't mm-hmm. just rotate the tires once. You don't just change the, what do you call when you get the thing? You fix your shock absorbers. Alignment.
Right.
Once. This is something you got to do regularly. And people spend more on their cars doing these maintenance things than their body. Why?
I mean, I agree with you completely. What I do personally with my patients, because my personality, I'm not like an authoritative person. So my personality is to let me give you the information. Let me explain what I feel is in your best interest and why, and answer your questions. And if you want to come on board, that's great. I'll work with you, and I'll explain the need for it. And the need for it is you come to me and you're 50 years old and you've had a chronic problem for 20 years and you have degenerative changes in your spine and now you're having enough pain to come to my office. Well, do you think once the pain goes away, once it stops hurting, that that problem is healed after you've had 20 years worth of it? There's no way. I'll put it in writing. It's going to continue to come back. So if you want a long-term solution, one, you need to be coming on a regular basis, not as frequently as you need initially, but most people, I would say, when they're at the point where the symptoms, really there's no symptoms or they're minimal, probably like at least once a month on a maintenance visit. But that's the reason why. And in addition, everything I've talked about, posture and exercise and eating and stress reduction, these are all things that you have to put into practice on a day-to-day basis. Once I lay that out, if a patient's like, yes, it makes sense, great. If it's no, you know what, I just want the pain to go away and I'm out of here. If I've explained everything to them to the best of my ability and that's what they want to do, that's their choice. And I just document in the notes. The patient is only interested in symptomatic care. And the other thing is when I talk to patients, I tell them, you know, everything I'm telling you, I'm reinforcing that. Like everything I'm talking to you about, I practice in my own life. I believe that. I think that's a way to be healthy. And I think that's a way to, you know, people are living longer now. Hopefully you're going to live longer and you're going to be more productive. Do you want to live a life where you have lots of energy and you're very productive? Or do you want to live a life where at a certain point in time, you're going to have 20 years of it just steadily downhill and feel terrible? So it's really my job is to give them that information and hopefully in a way that's motivating. But once they make a decision, I respect it. It's their bodies. And I try to be as non-judgmental as I can because it's ultimately it's their bodies. It's whatever they want to do. But I do want to make sure I'm clear, you know, what my feelings are. Because that's why you're coming to me, you know?
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
got
then
the same,
whatever happens.
We have the same problem. There's some people that, like, say, oh, I just want to take the St. John's Wort as a substitute for the Prozac, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, well, that's really applying allopathic principles to a naturopathic medicine. It's like applying a linear model to something that's holographic, and it just doesn't kind of work out. But if that's kind of where you're at, then we'll hopefully through hanging out with me and interacting with me, listening to my show, I invite them to listen to folks like you and I discussing things
mm-hmm.
like this, so then they can get an idea in their head, wow, really, so it's about me making these choices, these changes every day. Do I drink that coffee or do I drink some really good water? That's a
mm-hmm.
choice. That's a choice that you could make. Do I get that donut or do I have a nice smoothie in the morning? That's a choice. So it's,
you know,
like
it's
these
so, it's
day-to-day
so interesting
choices. Pardon?
Go ahead. Well, I'm just fine. It's so interesting because you know, everything that you're saying, like I look at people that I know, patients that I know, and what I've found and who I enjoy emulating are people who they're high energy people, you know, they're positive thinking people, they're successful in so many aspects of their life, and these are the people, they come in regularly for chiropractic adjustments, they exercise regularly, they eat well, like they put the effort into making themselves function better. And the people that really need what you're talking about most are the people who they're most reluctant to make the changes, who are not feeling well physically, not feeling well emotionally. And you present and say, you know what, you can make changes here, and they don't want to hear it. And I, like to myself, I just think, wow, you need this so much. And then here's this other person who's, you know, they're just, hey, I want to come before I even say anything to them. You know what, once I'm done with like this issue with the pain, like I want to get in on a regular basis, or I want to start like eating this way. And it's like, wow. So that's the person I want to be. So fortunately, in the nature of the work I do, and you probably see it too, you see a clear difference between people who are proactive with their health and their life and how they are versus people who will give me this for that. And yeah. I want to be the person who's proactive. Right. So it gets reinforced in my practice every single day. And yeah, it's a challenge, but ultimately, Eugene, with your patients, with my patients, all we can do is give them the information based upon our experience and hopefully in a way that's motivating and meaningful.
Right.
But then it's up to them. And you know what? I can let that go if I feel I've given them the information. Earlier in my career, it would be upsetting to me. Now it's like, hey, I've really been clear about this. That's their choice. That's their prerogative. Let me focus my attention on the next person who's coming in. And for my own health, I had to learn to do that.
Yeah, because, you know, that kind of segues us into a little bit on education, because I find that the young, you know, I was involved, of course, in the founding of the College of Naturopathic Medicine here on the only naturopathic school on the East Coast, and we have the chiropractic school there, and a lot of young grads come out, and they do feel like, wow, you know, clearly they want to change the world, but they realize that people have free choice and they have to, you know, go with that. And you just try your best to do that. Now, let's talk a little bit about, modern research on chiropractic. Are there, if someone listened to us and they felt good about our conversation, but then they're like, well, is it all placebo? I mean, like, you know, I go to this guy, Michael Horney, and he's very motivating. I like him. There's definitely a doctor-patient relationship thing there, but he's cracking my neck or he's doing something like that. Is there any like scientific rationale, or is all just a bunch of smoke and mirrors?
There's a lot of research, and you can probably Google this. I don't have it in front of me, but
okay.
on chiropractic care for headaches, for neck pain, and back pain. Those are the three things that there's a ton of research and good studies that are in respected journals.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Then there's a lot of stuff that anecdotally people will say, wow, this person really helped me with this, but there's not a lot of, in my opinion anyway, research that kind of would pass muster with some of the more prestigious journals. So, like, for instance, there could be people with asthma, particularly kids, that will go to chiropractors, and you speak to their parents, and it's like, wow, they got great results. But if you look in the literature, you know, there's not a ton of studies to show, well, why is that happening? Or you have, pediatric chiropractic. You know, like, there are some people, they'll do manipulation on a newborn baby. They'll manipulate, like, a woman who, let's say, there's a breech position, and there's certain types of manipulations to the woman that can help turn the baby. Well, there's not a lot of research on that, but you speak to the mom who went to that chiropractor and all of a sudden the baby wasn't breech anymore. So you have, you know, the neck pain, headaches, and back pain. That's probably from the perspective of, like, insurance carriers that are paying for our care. It's like, okay, we get it. You guys are good at that, and there's a lot of research to back it up.
Right.
All of the other things that chiropractors treat, I don't think you have the amount of research that's equivalent to that. But that doesn't mean you should dismiss it. I think if you're honest with a patient and someone comes in and you tell them, here is what I see as your issue, here is how we can help with it, here is what I would recommend that I think within this time frame you should get a sense that you came to the right place.
Right.
And sometimes that's the best you can do. And that's not just in chiropractic, probably any discipline, certainly including medicine.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard, to just give you a quick example, because, the good thing with chiropractic, it's very safe, it's very conservative, and you don't have to take my word for it. Like malpractice insurance for me, let's say for a chiropractor, that's like $1 million, $3 million on any particular claim or an aggregate, okay? I probably pay maybe $3,000 a year. So if you have a for-profit company that's insuring the chiropractor, you ask your family doctor for $1 million, $3 million, they're relatively safe, right? They're not doing surgery. How much they pay for malpractice? So the point is, if someone comes in, even if you don't have the scientific research, it's more anecdotal, what we do is very safe. So we're going to help or we're not going to help. It's very unlikely we're going to harm a patient. But I'll give you an example in medicine
Before you do that, because we only got about 2.5 minutes, make sure people can get in contact with you, because it would be a shame to give this information. They'll be like, who was that masked man?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, Michael. Where can people contact you?
You can. The office number is 631-751-7700. And my website is www.portjefferson, chiropractic.com. And if my email is michaelshorney@aol.com, michaelshorney@aol.com.
Right, and this show will be podcasted so people can listen to that again.
Great.
So I guess we got about a minute left. Final summation and closing thoughts.
One, I really appreciate being on the show. If you have any opportunities, in the future that you'd want me to talk with you, I would really appreciate it. It's terrific speaking with you, Eugene. God, it's been such a long time. I spoke at the University of Bridgeport last year.
Oh, too bad we didn't connect.
Yeah, so if you ever need someone to speak to any of your classes, let me know.
I spoke
to the chiropractic group there. And it's been a real pleasure. I know Ellen for a very long time. I think the work that you guys do is terrific, and I think it's really important for people to know that there's ways to help themselves in terms naturally. Because, all the pharmaceuticals and surgical commercials and stuff, like, everyone's inundated with that. They need to know there's complementary things as well. So it's been a pleasure.
Okay. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always get in touch with us at naturalnurse.com or Dr. Z Naturally. Take care.